Welcome to Monoreal Radio Dockside Chat number 19. I'm Sean.
And I'm Jackie.
And we are coming to you live from our home away from home, Dockside Margaritas.
Yes, home for the holidays. They have decked the halls so nicely. I feel like there are more decorations here than there have been in past years.
Absolutely.
And I'm just seeing this now as I'm looking around. They have oranges and limes in the garlands. That's incredible.
I want to take it home.
Yeah, if they sell these, I would have this everywhere. Maybe we just take them.
Well, I don't know that I want to just take them, because I don't want to be trespassed from our favorite spot. And a very nice setup here tonight, something new for us.
Yes, they've rolled out the Adirondack chairs. There's some new lounge seating. This is nice. It's like they knew we were coming.
Yes. All right, let's talk about the seasonal margarita. The spiced cranberry paloma with reposado tequila, cranberry juice, grapefruit juice, lime juice, and spiced simple syrup.
Yes. Operative word being spiced, not spicy. I don't know if that picked up because of the volcano. The emphasis on spiced, not spicy.
But we haven't tried it yet.
No, and we're questioning if we have the correct drink. Not that we ever want to doubt our friends here at Dockside Margaritas, but for a spiced drink, we're thinking it should be a little bit darker.
Well, it doesn't look like there's cranberry.
Very light. And there's no star anise. The picture had a star anise up on the menu where it described the drink, but I'm seeing nothing.
All right, well, I guess we're going to give this a shot. Cheers.
Here we go.
Yeah, that's it. There's the cranberry.
Yeah,
you get the cranberry on the back end.
But not much else. I don't get the all-spicy flavor I was hoping for with this. It's not bad.
Second sip. This isn't as good as the candy cane margarita that they did last year.
Yeah, the thing that sounded gross and was actually delicious.
Yeah. You get that little, cranberry, sour pucker on the back end. It's refreshing. It's good. I mean, it is a good seasonal margarita. For a Christmas margarita, I like it.
Yeah.
The second sip, I got a little bit more of that spice.
Yeah, I mixed it a little too. I had to learn to start doing that before we taste them.
Yeah, you really should. You really should. But we have an awful lot to talk about tonight. I'm very excited for this episode.
This is going to be a jam-packed show. So without further ado, this episode is sponsored by Hidden Mickey Supply Co. Products include Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars-inspired 3D straw charms, ornaments, and so much more. Listeners of Monoreal Radio can get a 10% discount with the code MONOREAL10 at checkout. Visit Hidden Mickey Supply Co. on Instagram and Etsy to stay up to date on all of the new releases.
So before we came over here, we did go over to Jock Lindsay's.
Yes, we were going to do a live tasting of some of their holiday offerings, but it was just so crowded. Well, first of all, it was so crowded just getting in here. We parked at surface parking.
Yeah, which we never do.
We got here after dark, so that I didn't mind, because normally we avoid it because your car just bakes in the sun. So it wasn't so bad because the sun was already gone at that point, but even finding parking there was a little hectic. I mean, to be fair, we did come out to record. It is the Sunday going into Thanksgiving week. We knew what we were up against, but I don't think I was expecting it to be this crazy just yet. But we did get a seat at the bar at Jock Lindsay's right away.
Yeah, which
so
was a surprise.
So we were able to try some of the holiday offerings. We just didn't want to turn the recorder on and disrupt the people around us. Not to mention, I don't think we would have sounded very good with that many people on top of us.
Correct. But we got the Merry Margarita.
That I liked better than this. I'm sorry, Dockside Margaritas. Please forgive me. But that was one of the most well-balanced drinks I've ever had. Because a lot of times when you have a lot of those holiday flavors, one thing is dominant. Like with this one, the cranberry is dominant. That one, it was a little sweet, a little tangy. They had like a nice, they put like a sugar cube in the shape of mistletoe into the drink. And with the sugar rim, it was so nice. It was so balanced. That's my favorite margarita for the holidays so far.
Yeah.
Please don't kick us out.
And we did indulge in a couple of the holiday offerings in terms of the food.
the world famous pigs in a blanket.
Which
world famous for a reason.
World famous for a reason. They've never had them before, to my knowledge, but they should stay on the menu and become world famous. These were absolutely delicious.
They were amazing. First of all, they give you a lot. There's,
you got 10 of them.
Yeah. I would say that was probably like 2 full hot dogs per person.
Yes.
And they give you a really nice, like, cranberry mustard, which I'm not a mustard person, but the mustard was not the dominant flavor. It was really nice. I was liking that as, like, a nice little dip situation.
Little spread. Yeah. And the turkey croquettes. We go a croquetting, I think, is what they called it. Together we go a croquetting. Whatever it was, they're turkey croquettes with the gravy. And oh my God.
They were incredible.
Unbelievable.
Honestly, like, we could end the show on this note. They were just that good.
Don't think for a second I won't end this right now to go to get go more back. Of them.
Yeah, because what it looks like in the pictures and when they serve it, it looks like a turkey meatball with cranberry on top served on a bed of sweet potatoes. What you forget is that the turkey is mixed in with the stuffing, so it's like this bread bowl, like almost, not quite like a rice ball, but if you're familiar with the arancini with the meat in it, it's sort of like that, but this, I dare say, was even better, because it was so light. You know what it was? It was more like a hush puppy with turkey in it.
It was very good.
Absolutely delicious. That is a standout for holiday offerings so far.
Yes, so let's get you caught up with where we've been for a little while, because we did not have a Dockside Chat out in October.
Which we sincerely apologize for. We absolutely hate missing episodes, but life just slapped us in the face quite a few times in these past couple of months. So we are going to catch up back from September. We're going to keep it brief because some of this stuff is dated at this point, but we didn't want to just breeze through without mentioning some of these things, especially because you had a lot of races.
Yep.
This is, you know, the launch of your season, so we're definitely going to get into that. But we actually had to cancel a bunch of the things that we had planned because...
including coming out to Disney Springs.
Yes, including coming out to Disney Springs because one of the mornings that you raced, which we will get into, it was a rare Saturday where you had to go cover a shift at work.
Right.
So Sean ran in the morning. He was going to come home and nap. Well, you were napping.
I was
and then
asleep.
You were going to go into your shift. And I was cleaning the house and I had to wake Sean up because it started raining inside our 2-year-old home. I was shocked, to say the least. It was coming out of our light switch, which is what presented the biggest problem because we were not comfortable, even though we turned the breaker off, we were not comfortable leaving the home unattended, especially leaving Walt unattended, when there was water running behind electricity. And it took far too long to get a roofer in to fix it. They came and they quoted us promptly, but to actually pull the permit and get it repaired was probably definitely 3 weeks, maybe closer to a month. So anything that we had planned, we had to cancel because we were even going in shifts to the grocery store just for the sake of not leaving the house unattended. And we were also up against having to leave town because we had not one but 2 weddings. So things were a little bit crazy, to say the least, but we did get some fun stuff in, starting with a night at Universal City Walk. It's no secret, if you've been listening to us for a long time, you know that Boy Meets World is my jam, and I have become an avid listener of Pod Meets World, which, for those who aren't familiar, it is Danielle Fishel, Ryder Strong, and Will Friedle, who played Topanga, Sean, and Eric, respectively. No Ben Savage, because he's too good for them. They're doing the Rewatch podcast, and if you were a fan of the show, I can't recommend listening to it enough. Not just for the behind-the-scenes information, but the interview skills that the three of them possess to put their guests so at ease and have them open up about not only their experience on the show, but what it was like to be a child actor in the 90s. It's just incredible, the picture that they paint and the nostalgia that comes with listening. So they've been touring and doing live appearances and not recording the show live. It's been more of a Q&A, but anyway, they were doing a taping at the Hard Rock Live at City Walk, which after we saw Kevin Smith do his Q&A after Clerks 3, we swore off that venue because we didn't have a great experience. We said we would only go back if it was something we truly loved. So wouldn't you know it, that's where they picked to have the show, and as soon as the tickets went on sale, I went to Sean, hat in hand, and was like, can we please get tickets? So we went. Thankfully, we had a much better experience at the venue. This was a much smoother operation. And call me biased, but I thought the show was just wonderful. I think it's more important for you to give your opinion at this point, because it's more objective, because you don't hold the show, as much as you enjoyed it, you don't hold the show on this pedestal that I have it on.
So here's my thing. I didn't watch Boy Meets World until I was in my mid-20s. We did not watch a lot of TGIF in real time because my mom worked nights. So on Friday nights, my dad would take my brother and I to Ground Round for dinner every Friday night. It was next door in the same shopping center to our local video store. We'd pick out a movie, we'd pick out a video game, something that we'd have for the weekend. That was every Friday night. So I never watched it. I appreciate it more as an adult than I think I ever would have as a kid. So I'm actually kind of glad that I held off and waited. And in regards to seeing them live, I mean, we've met Ryder and Danielle. We've never met Friedle. But
we'll get them. Don't worry.
But the two of them were so lovely when we met them that you want to support people like that. They are so good. The three of them together are so good and so entertaining. You could tell the real camaraderie there. So even for somebody like me who understood absolutely none of the inside jokes that they all shared, didn't understand any of the costumes that people were wearing to the costume contest, even I sat there for that hour and a half and had a really nice night just enjoying them as performers.
Objectively, they are just good talk radio. They're wonderful. They're great at what they do. I am honestly dreading the moment that they run out of episodes to recap. I hope they do something else and continue just because it is such a good podcast. But it was a wonderful night. They were hilarious. We had incredible seats. I mean, like, once I found out that they were performing, I knew I was going all in. I was like, especially because we didn't have a great experience at the venue, I had us fourth row aisle. I was getting as close as I possibly could. My only regret is that we didn't dress up because, you know, they're calling people on stage. Will is giving away. He's got, like, every script ever from Boy Meets World, and he's signing it. So I wish we would have had that chance. And I thought of a great costume after the fact because that's what always happens, right? But that was great. And then we got into... Oh, well, no. Then the next week, sorry, I am out of order on our list here because we were not at the flood yet. We were.
That's right.
The next week we had our Mickey's Not So Scary tickets, which we were so looking forward to because last year was our first time attending and we couldn't wait for it to come up again. Lesson learned next year. I promise you, I would never ever make you paint your face again.
Yes.
So instead of going last year's theme. For those who didn't see our pictures, was Mary Poppins, y'all. So I went as Mary Poppins and Sean went as Yondu, complete with blue face paint. I really can't complain because I definitely wasn't as comfortable as you, but polyester in Florida don't mix, especially in September.
Thankfully, you learned your lesson. And this year we went in a far more comfortable costume.
Yes, we found on Amazon last year in conjunction with the 30th anniversary of the Mighty Ducks, we found the jerseys. not exactly screen accurate because there were some Team USA jerseys that they put on the Mighty Ducks, but I didn't care because I wanted to go as the Bash Brothers because later on, Dean Portman goes on to marry Elsa Idina Menzel. He is Mr. Idina Menzel. But we wanted to go as Reed and Portman, and we did. We got the bandanas. My bandana I found on Amazon. It was great. It had, I'm still not exactly sure what the material was, but you could soak it. And I'm for runners, I mean, you're going to use this after the fact.
Yeah.
You can freeze it. It was so comfortable. I was so nice and cool. I enjoyed the night so much. And we got to be there with our friends Brian and Kayla and their two daughters. So Avery looked so cute. She was dressed up as Winifred Sanderson. Kayla did her makeup to perfection. And we just had a blast hanging out with them.
Yeah, it was a really nice event. The trick-or-treat trails, they were very generous with the candy this year. All in all, I thought that it was a really well-run event. Again, not unlike last year. I think TBD on whether or not we attend it again next year. I don't say that because it's not a great event. It is. The Boot to You Parade. I mean, I'll start listening to that music today and start getting hyped. But there is just so much here in Central Florida amongst all the parks that we may decide to try something different, but who knows? Disney might roll out a different Halloween party next year. More, you know, because obviously they've rolled out a second Christmas party this year. We're going to talk about that in a little while. I mean, listen, Feet to the Fire, are we going next year? Yeah, I think Feet to the Fire, we're going. But we have to see what comes.
Yeah, because last year we went all in. We did Not So Scary, we did Horror Nights, and we did Howl Scream at SeaWorld. So this year...
And we did Very Merry.
Well, I'm talking about the Halloween event.
Oh, just the Halloween
event. Just
events.
The Halloween event.
Yeah, okay.
So we did all three. We went all in because it was our first year down here. And because our first Not So Scary was supposed to be in 2020. And not sure if you heard, but we got gypped out of that one. So we wanted to experience everything. But even before the issue with the roof, we were starting to pick and choose where we wanted to spend our money. But before we move on, one of the biggest differences I do want to point out about Not So Scary, because we were trying to get on the rides that did have the overlays. We unfortunately didn't get to go on Haunted Mansion because the line was just too crazy, and they did have the actors out front, which I really wanted to see. But instead, we opted to do Pirates because we really enjoyed the added actors last year. They were nowhere to be found this year, but instead what they had was a band outside called Rusty Cutlass.
They were so good.
I dare say that was kind of an upgrade. Like, I missed the Pirates, especially in the queue, because that was really fun. But this band was so good, and they were so into it. That was really fun to watch. So, as far as I'm guessing Disney's budget, you sort of break even with the performers. They just had them in a different way. But I was disappointed when we were on the ride, but then when we came off and then we saw that, I was like, I kind of get it. And then the additions to the parade, I feel like a lot of people didn't love that the that Daisy, Clarabelle, and Minnie as the Sanderson sisters kind of took top billing over Mickey, because on that float, they were up higher than Mickey. However, that would mean that they come before Mickey in order, and like, how do you not lead with him? But I loved the costume updates this year. I loved the color palette. I thought those were all fabulous. I loved the addition of the Sanderson sisters. I loved the addition of Ursula to the parade. That was fantastic. I did feel, and I had said this to you, and I'm curious if anybody else that got to see Boo to You would agree with us, I felt like the parade was faster this year. Oh, that was another change. No Headless Horseman. I don't know if that was just our night, or if because
it was just our night,
they had it at Disneyland. I'm wondering if they switched it out this year.
No, it was just our night, because it wasn't rainy, but it was very humid and dewy. And if it's wet, they're not going to send him. So he was there. We just didn't get him on our particular night.
Okay. But I still do feel like the parade was quicker, and that had nothing to do with it. I just felt like they were moving things through a lot faster.
I don't feel that it was any shorter. I think they just moved through it faster. Because we did catch it twice that night.
Right. Once to actually watch it, and once on our way out.
But I thought the snacks were okay. I thought they were better last year. I felt that this year's snacks didn't quite strike a balance. I felt like it was a lot of spicy, spicy, spicy.
The offerings were definitely more spicy across the board. I did like the new offerings, though. We went to Pecos Bill. I had the burger, which was really, really good. And then we got the corn milkshake, the cornbread milkshake.
Yes.
That was delicious.
That was good.
That I really liked. But yeah, there were a lot of things that we didn't even want to try just because the description, we're not people that are into spicy food. I certainly don't want to be eating anything spicy with an hour and 15 minute car ride home. No,
yeah,
thank
not a good
you.
Idea.
So there was a lot that we skipped, but I will say there was a noticeable difference with the elevated menu with what they're offering.
I'll agree with that. I'd agree with that. But all in all, we had a really nice time that night. Let's get to the weekend where we had the rain inside the living room. And let's talk about the race that I ran with a number of members of that WDW radio running team. The first run of the quote-unquote season for us, at least as a small group, was the Margaritaville 5K or 10K. I did the 10K at the Margaritaville Resort just down the road from Disney.
Which is beautiful.
It is a stunning resort.
It really is.
And it was a great, great race. It was hot that morning. It was hot and humid. But we ran the grounds. The grounds are so well manicured, it's ridiculous. They had a great cocktail hour, a happy hour, the day before for the runners. Upon finishing, you were handed a beer and a margarita. You got
because,
your medal.
Of course.
There was live music. It was an extraordinarily well-run event, and I will be back every year.
Let's talk about the vibe, though, because this was coming on the heels of Jimmy Buffett's passing. I mean, he passed in Jimmy Buffett fashion Labor Day weekend. Summer's over, and he peaced out.
Right.
Was it more celebratory or more somber?
It was celebratory.
Okay.
I think enough time had passed. Because it was, Jimmy died on the 1st, and I think the race was on like the 26th or something like that, so.
30th.
Oh, it was the 30th.
It was the 30th.
That's right, so almost an entire month had passed, and they really did a good job, the MCs and the people there, of making it a happy day, and making it a celebration, and a day of remembrance, but a day of fun. Absolutely loved it. Great shirt, actually. The running shirt they gave was outstanding.
Yeah.
Like, they just, like, for the money, it was an extremely well-run event, and I'm looking forward to doing it every year, because now I'll be a perfect parrot. That's what I'm calling it. I ran, because last year was just the 5K, this year was the 5 and 10K. So, I'm calling it perfect parrot.
Okay.
And then, I went to Halloween Horror Nights.
Yes. Not planned. I mean, well, yes,
well,
it was planned that we were going. It was not planned that I was going to be there because I had to leave for New York with the dog earlier than anticipated because, like I said, life slapped us in the face. So I left you with the roof and I peaced out with the dog. And I had to miss your birthday. This was supposed to be your birthday celebration and I am still figuring out ways to make it up to you.
You don't have to worry about it.
It might be Victoria and Albert's because I feel that badly.
I mean, I'm not going to fight you, but I think it's unnecessary. But whatever, it is what it is. You did leave me in the capable hands of our good friends. You've heard all of them on the show, Joe and Tyler and Kelly and Pat. And hard.
Well, I do hope you all had a miserable time without me.
Yeah, it was awful. Me and Kelly and Pat did Stay and Scream. So we didn't do Stay and Scream last year, you and I, because we were on the clock with the dog. But we did Stay and Scream. And
yeah, you had the whole night.
Yeah. It was interesting. It was worth it, but we got sent to like two or three different places to get our bracelets, and then we had to go through and show our bracelets again, even though we were already in the party. Like, they looped us out and brought us back in. It was a little strange how they did it, but we knocked out three houses before the event technically opened because of the Stay and Scream, one of which was Stranger Things.
See, that's worth it in and of itself. Yeah.
So, Stranger Things was excellent. I'll quickly work my way through this. Food and beverages were good. Theming was outstanding. Merchandise was very good. I did rate the houses that I went into. I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. The only house I missed, I believe, was Exorcist.
And that was the only one you missed, or the only one that you wanted to do that
you
missed?
No, the only one that I missed.
That's not bad. I don't even think you've given me your ranking yet. Okay.
I ended up being there until after 1 o'clock in the morning.
Which we would have never been able to do with Walt.
But most of the houses were a 15-minute wait or under. And we had favorable weather, so that was a little bit of a surprise versus last year. But I think that was also the benefit of Stay and Scream. Oh, and I ran into our good friend John Sicari from Big Fat Panda. It was good to see him. I hadn't seen him in a while, so... Ran into him, I had a drink, we hung out for like 45 minutes. It was like nice to get off my feet for a little while, and I think that that's kind of why I was able to hit as many at the end of the night as I was, because I got together with John kind of in the middle of the event, and that filtered a lot of people out. But anyway, in my personal ranking, Stranger Things was number 1.
I'd hope.
Yeti Campground was number 2.
Okay.
Blood Moon was 3. Darkest Deal was 4. Dueling Dragons was 5. Chucky was 6. Universal Monsters was 7.
What?
And Oddfellow was 8. I thought Oddfellow and Monsters would be at the top of the list. Now, let me say, none of these houses were bad. They were all very good or outstanding. So don't let that ranking, like, lead you to believe that there was a bad house. But I was a little disappointed that Oddfellow didn't fall as high as I thought. I had Oddfellow as a top 3 house for me before I got there.
I'm surprised that Chucky fell that low for you, because you were really looking forward to that one.
And it was really good.
And it, from what you told me, it was a little kitschy. But last year when we did the Bug House, what was it, Bugs Eaten Alive,
yeah,
something like that?
Yeah.
That was a kitschy one with a sci-fi theme, but we really embraced that. That was our first house. What I'm really surprised at on your list is how far Monsters fell. I mean, that is really a tribute to how good the rest of these houses were, because Monsters was our top one last year.
Yes.
I love the classic Monsters, so I was super bummed that I had to miss out, but something to look forward to next year.
Yeah. So that was where we were at with Halloween Horror Nights. I want to stick with Universal a little bit and run that into, pun intended, the Wine and Dine race weekend. So, with you being out of town, the race fell in between the weddings that we were attending. So I went to New York, I came back, I went to New York again. But in between was the race weekend for Wine and Dine. Initially, my goal was to get a room on Disney property for one night. It was just going to be for Sunday, because I was going to come run the race, go back to the hotel, take a shower, hang by the pool, catch the Dolphins game, because they were playing against the Chiefs in Germany in the morning, take a nap, go to Epcot for the after party, sleep it off, and then go home the next day and go to work.
Yes. And your travel professional looked up the pricing for that weekend.
8 months in advance.
All-Stars, I believe, were going for $225.
You're wrong. They were going for $275.
No.
Yes, they were.
I believe with the discounts, though, it was still 25. Because they, once the discounts were added, they came down a little bit. But not to a point where... That pricing used to be for Caribbean Beach. So on principle, we were like, nah.
So I said, well, if Disney's running annual pass discounts, Florida resident discount it was, Universal must be doing it too. I stayed at Universal Endless Summer, which is one of their value resorts. I stayed for the entire weekend, whereas at Disney I was going to stay one night, and it was going to cost me $225 plus tax and resort fees, so call it $250. I did the entire weekend at Endless Summer for $200. $50 cheaper, I got the entire weekend. And let me tell you
something. It's a no-brainer.
Not only was it a no-brainer, it was a 14-minute drive.
It's beautiful.
From the hotel to Epcot. This resort was stunning. It was clean. The pool was amazing. The food was great. The food was reasonably priced. The pool bar was great. And while I waited for my room, I shot next door and jumped on a bunch of coasters over at Islands of Adventure just to kill some time. I had such a wonderful stay, and, I mean, look, you as a travel professional, book Disney, book Universal, you could do just about anything, and I would implore anybody that if you do get to a point where you feel that perhaps you're getting slightly priced out of a Disney resort, I would implore you to really look into some of those Universal offerings, specifically Endless Summer.
Universal's value resorts, and I'm not throwing shade to Disney here because I love the values. Pop Century was always our jam. We always looked forward to staying there. It is where we got engaged. I will never throw shade on the value resorts. However, Universal's value resorts are like what a Disney moderate is.
For real.
As far as, like, the aesthetic, the design, the quality, the service, their value is starting at what a Disney moderate would be, and for less of a price. So I know it might not be the most convenient thing for people that aren't local if you're coming down for the week and you're not renting a car, to stay at Universal and go to Disney, but if you are thinking about traveling and you're not liking the Disney pricing, and nobody blames you for that, there is an alternative, and it's worth looking into.
Fantastic alternative.
And they do, Universal's not stupid either. They do offer shuttles to Disney. They will get the money for it, but they'd rather take your money than put you in an Uber or a taxi. So they will send you to their competitor as long as you pay them to do it. Not a bad option.
It's not a bad option. Let's talk about the Wine and Dine race weekend specifically. I went to Expo on Saturday. I usually don't wait that long to go to Expo, but I did. And it was a great decision. I was there before Expo opened, so I was one of the first people through the gate when they opened it. Now, interestingly, they opened it late that day. They opened it at 11. Everybody said, wait a minute, they're supposed to open it at 10. So what did I do? I got there at 9:45, thinking it was opening at 10, but it opened at 11. But whatever, I didn't mind. I did some, answered some emails, hung out. But I flew through. It took me 4 minutes. Compared to what we dealt with at Marathon Weekend, when we waited on that line for pack and pickup, and I'll be going through this again in a few weeks. From the moment I stepped foot into the field house to the time I was walking out with my shirt and my bib, 4 minutes.
Wow.
It was very quick. And all of the talk of them being out of race merchandise, I didn't buy anything, but I said, let me go into the shop, I'll look around. They had just about everything. They had a lot more Run Disney specific merchandise than weekend merchandise, which I thought was an interesting change. But I think when you get shirts for running these races, you're not as inclined to buy more merchandise with the same logo, the same race, and the same character on it. So that was something I noticed that was different. And the race course was different. A lot of things that they did for Wine and Dine this year were different. We got an email a couple of weeks prior telling people that the costume policies had changed and they were getting more strict, which I understand some people get a little out of control with it, and like, it's great that you want to be in the spirit of the thing, but like, you have to think about your own safety and the safety of runners around you.
Sure.
That I understood. Then, I believe it was the week of the race, we got another email. So you have five corrals, A, B, C, D, and E, which has become standard, with specific open and close times for each corral. It had been in the past that they all open at the same time, not, and they close basically at the same time. Not the case here. Very specific times, and I know that that confused some people, especially because a lot of people were trying to get character photos before they went into their corrals. My understanding was that Corral E was a nightmare because they opened it very late. There weren't porta-potties near there. People were kind of just standing around. I understand the need for crowd control. They said that this was one of the most heavily populated half marathons that they've ever had.
See, that's where you lose me, because if it's heavily populated, there has to be a capacity, correct?
Well, they started the race where they had started 5Ks and 10Ks in the past. They didn't start us on the long stretch.
I see.
On the highway.
Okay.
Where they have started us for previous half marathons.
Okay.
In fact, when they staged us, I couldn't believe that the starting line was there. I thought that they were going to move us. Imagine my surprise where they looped us around and we were already basically at the starting line. We were nowhere near. Now, I didn't mind walking that half a mile to get to the starting line, but this felt a little condensed. Listen, they're trying something new. Hopefully they do not do this for Marathon Weekend. If they do, they're going to have to fine-tune it, but I think that Marathon Weekend is just too hectic for them to pull that off.
Let me ask you, though, do you think that this is something that they're doing in the runner's interest to change it up, keep it fresh? Or do you think that this has more to do with they are treating this like these ticketed after-hours events, which we have been saying feels like they're selling more tickets and they're still, they feel crowded. They feel more crowded than they have in past years because they are overselling them to make more money.
I don't think they're overselling them to make more money, because eventually people, and then with the way that they're raising the ticket prices to get into these races, eventually you're going to start pricing people out, and then the mania is not there and the demand isn't going to be there. So I don't think that that's necessarily what they're doing. If anything, if I had to take a guess, because the volunteers are not getting tickets to the parks for free anymore, I'm wondering if part of this was they had to condense the operation because they didn't have as many volunteers as they have had in the past. Because there is no perk to being a volunteer for Run Disney anymore.
Those are all good points. I was just wondering more, like, where is the cutoff? Because that's dangerous. This isn't, like, Very Merry or Not So Scary, where they oversell it and it's like, well, it should be a 10-minute wait for pirates, and instead it's still 40 minutes, like, during the day because we're oversold here. This is a hazard and a danger, and there's got to be a point where they say, no, we have to stop.
My understanding was that they had about 14,000 people in the race this year, which I thought was about average, but apparently it was more than average. It didn't feel any more crowded than any previous races, so, I mean, I didn't feel it in that way. But they started us in Epcot, went to the boardwalk, usually, like, we're running past the Boardwalk Bakery where the running team has their setup, and they're on my right. This particular race, they were on my left.
That's usually your home stretch.
Yes. So that was early in the race this year. I ran the half marathon for reference. Then we went into Hollywood Studios, and we did some backstage.
Wait, you do need to back up to Epcot, though, because you had an incredible character stop there, which I know you don't usually stop for characters, but this one, you had to. Have you really forgotten?
Well, that was at the end of the race.
Oh, okay.
Because they looped us back.
I thought you stopped for them because they were off the beaten path.
They were at the end of the race.
All right, go ahead. I'll stop.
Well, no, I'll go ahead. Gamora and Star-Lord, we stopped for them. We stopped for three character stops. It was Gamora and Star-Lord, Judy from Zootopia.
And Judy
with
and
Nick.
Yeah.
And the ballroom dancers from Haunted Mansion, which was cool to see, but also kind of strange that we saw them, because I believe we saw them coming back into Epcot behind World Showcase.
Yeah, like Star-Lord and Gamora made sense because they were outside the Guardians. That's why nobody
knew
they were there.
That's why no one knew that they were there. They were outside of the attraction, off the beaten path. We caught them out of the corner of our eye, waited maybe 3 minutes.
That's
and got
awesome.
A picture. I got a really good picture. She looked great. She looked just like Gamora. But all in all, it was the running conditions. The weather was incredible. I thought for the cluster that were the corrals, I think they actually did move us through very quickly. There wasn't a lot of standing around, which was good because it was cold that morning. They got the forecast wrong by almost 10 degrees, so it was very chilly to start the race. But conditions were good. It was comfortable. And the after party, you know, I got there at about 5 o'clock. I had VIP, obviously, so I was able to get in and not have to wait for my bracelet. The one thing that they did that I didn't love was that they closed everything at 9 o'clock when Epcot closed. Technically speaking, the after party didn't start up again until 10. So they closed almost everything for that hour.
When they used to give you the plus ones for the runner's after party, which we would do when we were on vacation, I mean, the first time we went, we were at Epcot till like 4 o'clock in the morning and it was wonderful. So you didn't necessarily care that they shut everything down for like a half an hour to turn over the park, to make sure everybody filtered out. Because I get it.
We didn't have to worry about it because by the time we finished the race, Epcot had already been closed for a few hours.
Right. But I'm saying that the way that they close everything, I understand why you have to do it, because otherwise you're not going to be able to filter everyone out if everybody continues to wait online to get a pretzel, to get that one more drink before they leave the park, to get the one thing that they need to walk out with. It's going to be impossible to filter them out. So I understand where you have to close vendors and stores to make sure that everybody is making their way out. But to do that for an hour, I feel like is extreme.
I think it's best you do it for a half hour, where you start closing things down at 8:30.
Or just have more people patrolling.
I mean, they were very, very strict about show us your bracelet every time you exited and tried to re-enter World Showcase. They did the right thing. And I got to go and hang out and spend time with our friend Brittany from Fierce Fox.
I'm so jealous that you got to meet her and I was not there.
Well, when she saw me, the first thing she said is, "Hi, where's Jackie?" And I went, "Great, I'm here."
But that's normally nice how it goes.
We sat in Germany, we had a nice time, had a beer, talked about a bunch of things, and talked about our, you know, her experience with the race and how things were different. But, I mean, look, Wine and Dine is my favorite all around because I love the after party and because, like, it's my spirit animal. It was the first Run Disney weekend I ever did. I'll always run Wine and Dine. But I'll tell you, I didn't stay for the whole after party because I got more done before the after party in terms of food and drink and attraction than I did during the after party, because when they closed the booths for that long, all it did was build lines for literally everything. I know people that were supposed to show up at the after party that they got to World Showcase, they got to the back entrance, the line, my understanding, was about an hour to get your bracelet and get in. They turned around and didn't even come to the after party.
Oh, my gosh.
They're half, like, I just wish that there was a way that they could expedite this a little bit.
Because that's such a shame. Like, first of all, you guys are up very early in the morning, so you're already exhausted, but, like, 9 times out of 10, you're going to rally for Epcot when it's closed to the rest of the general
right.
public. But if you have an early flight out the next morning, if you're not local, I mean, that's really not fair, and it's totally decreasing the value of what you're supposed to get as part
right.
of the run. I mean, the point is the run, yes, but there is a lot of value, especially when they keep driving up the prices of Run Disney, too. Like, part of this is you get a park ticket. So to not be able to utilize that is kind of unfair.
Yeah. I mean, I still had a great time. Can't wait to do it again next year. Let's talk about another event.
Yes.
Because we initially were not going to discuss this tonight.
Yes. Full disclosure, listeners, we were going to gear this episode towards all of the fall events that we had done, because we're not the types that race through Thanksgiving to get to Christmas. So we were going to do this episode as more of a catch-up because we missed our October Dockside and just focus on the fall things, and then next month in December, our plan was to talk about all of the Christmas stuff. However, we had our tickets to Jollywood last night, and we
night
have...
Night number two of the party.
Night number two of the event, yes. Night number two ever. And we have heard nothing but hate being spewed for this event, and we feel like everyone deserves to know the truth. Because we had nothing but a spectacular time. So, for the sake of clearing Jollywood's name, we want to tell you about our wonderful experience. Anything that you've heard, I would implore everybody to keep in mind that it was the first night. Not just the first night of this year, the first night ever. It's a brand new event. So what I'm seeing online is super disappointing, that Disney is getting no grace, that everything didn't go perfectly. I mean, if you've ever been to a restaurant opening,
you don't go
or
for the
a
first
store
2 weeks.
Opening, you have to give them time to troubleshoot some things. That's why there are soft openings or there are media nights, so that they can learn what they need to change. And with Jollywood, it was one in the same. It was the media
which
night.
Which was a mistake, I think, on their end.
Yes. I mean, it is, as we can tell from the price point, it is a more costly event to put on. So I don't know that they would be doing a media preview if they would have had the resources to just do that. But the takeaway, I mean, the media professionals are trying to be as diplomatic as they can. But everyone else who needed to go because they have a platform and weren't invited there and needed to be there for clout or whatever their reasons were, they trashed it. And it's really a shame, because there are ways of critiquing things without condemning them. And I think that people forget about constructive criticism.
Oh, 2023, that doesn't exist anymore.
No, because people are already canceling the event. And what's really happening, what's even worse, aside from the rhetoric of the people that actually attended the event, is the other influencers who didn't attend picking it up and running with it. And what's happened is that you've created a panic among people who have tickets and think that they're going to be severely disappointed. I can tell you from our experience, you absolutely will not be. Like anything, this event is going to be what you make it. So first and foremost, my suggestion is going on the app and prioritizing what it is that you wanted to do. For mine and Sean's experience, we knew it was Muppets, Muppets, Muppets. That was top priority.
Yeah.
But the way that we did plan our evening was sort of based around where the snacks were. Because I think the other thing that everybody is forgetting is that this event, all the main attractions are within two blocks, Main Street and Sunset Boulevard.
Right.
There are other character opportunities. There are other performers that are spread throughout. But your main draw is going to be within those two blocks. So there's going to be lines. You have to keep that in mind. Based on everything that we had heard, and we were really trying not to have anything spoiled for us, so we didn't look into anything. We didn't seek out any information, which was really difficult to do because it was just everywhere. But most of what we saw was all of the negativity surrounding the lines. Anything that we heard it seemed like they worked out all of the kinks because Disney was listening to the complaints surrounding this event. So we got there. This was a four-hour event, which was perfect for us because we were on the clock with the dog. So factoring in driving time, we couldn't get there too much earlier than it started anyway.
You're about an hour early.
Yeah, we were aiming to be there by 7 because the other thing is, with our particular APs, we couldn't get into the park early with our annual pass because we were blocked out from this weekend.
Right.
So you could get in starting at 7 o'clock for an 8:30 event start. We got there around 7:20. We walked right through. We went through security. We checked in, got scanned in with our tickets, and we had a bracelet probably by 7:25.
Yeah.
It went off without a hitch. I think that was probably something that they had troubleshooted from all the issues that people had the week prior, because a lot of the complaints that I saw were that people that were already inside the park waited 45 minutes for bracelets. Not our experience at all. What they get big kudos on is, much like you were talking about with shutting down Epcot so that everybody has to filter out, they did the same thing. A lot of the vendors were closed. A lot of
The booths,
they were all closed down. But what they were very smart about is they got those character meets started at 8 o'clock. So we're not always big on characters. Like, we'll do it if there's no line. But because everything else was shut down, we were like, we're not going to go and, like, rope drop food. So we saw the line for Max had started. Max Goof, this is Max's power line. It wasn't very long. So we said, you know what, let's get on it. I don't think once they actually brought Max out that we waited for more than 15 minutes.
It was 15 minutes.
And we had our photo before the event even started. So it's 8:15 now. We still have 15 minutes. And then we were able to get online for our next thing that we wanted to do before it even started. I mean, so far, we were hitting the ground running, and it was great.
Yeah, if you're a merch person, they didn't have a ton of it. But for us, that wasn't a big deal because we've been on vacation here so many times, and now being locals, we don't buy as much merch as we used to. You know, like the occasional seasonal spirit jersey, or if they come out with a really cool lounge fly.
Or the home decor.
Right.
That's like our pitfall now. It's not the jerseys, it's the home decor.
But we were able to get online at Fairfax Fair, waited 5 minutes to get the winner and still champion of any snack that I've ever had.
If we were in studio right now and I had the actual microphone,
I'd be there.
I would drop it. I'm not going to do that with this little hand recorder because I'll break it. But I would drop the mic on that one. It was incredible. So like I said, we were planning this night mostly around food and Muppets. So we figured we would knock out the Sunset Boulevard stuff first. This was just so good. I cannot even... Well, I'm going to have to try and put it into words, I guess. It was Thanksgiving rolled into one. It was a popover stuffed with garlic mashed potatoes, turkey... No, well, the turkey was not stuffed, so the popover is like open-faced. Stuffed with the mashed potatoes, turkeys on top, cranberries, gravy. It was the perfect holiday bite. Everything was cooked to perfection. I don't care what anybody says about the food. This was absolutely incredible.
And what impressed me about the food was, admittedly, with our AP discounts, we paid about $150 a head. For night number two. Now, as you know, with Disney, the prices do fluctuate as you get closer to Christmas. The price is going to go up. And we got a little bit of a savings because we are annual pass holders. Unlike going to Very Merry or Not So Scary, when you pay that money and you get unlimited cookies, hot chocolate, apple cider, or you get the trick-or-treat trails, Jollywood didn't give you anything. So I was a little cautiously optimistic going in about, I mean, we wanted to do it, we were excited to do it, but I was like, geez, what are they going to do for us Now that we've given them $150, to have the privilege of giving them more money.
Yes.
These were full-size portions at Food and Wine Festival prices. We did not spend $40 on food for the entire night, the two of us combined, and yet we ate all night.
The portions were huge.
I was impressed.
I would have paid $10 or $12 for that popover and done it happily.
And it was $6.49.
We also got the peanut butter and jelly donut, which was really nice. The peanut butter was whipped.
Yeah.
And I think they put confectioner's sugar in it, so it was more like that, you know, the inside of a Reese's peanut butter cup kind of a texture. The donut was okay, but together it was a really nice dessert. And then from there, we decided to go over to the Tip Top Club because we figured that that was going to be a big draw, and that was another place that we had heard was kind of a cluster you-know-what.
And I could understand
why. Yes. So I think that we had an improved experience from those who went to night one, but that's the one area where it's like they're kind of doing the best they could with what they have to work with. So you go past the entrance to Tower of Terror, really to the exit where the Joffrey's cart is, and they feed the line for the bar through that the seating area, the benches.
Yes.
That has the nice pergola over it, that shady spot. It's really
behind
nice
Joffrey's.
And quiet behind Joffrey's during the day. So they feed the line through there, and then the bar is almost backstage. They have like a, I think the doors were open to let you semi-backstage. I believe they added bartenders because people were complaining a lot about how long this line was the first night, based on what we've heard. They had like six bartenders going. And there's two alcoholic beverages and one
mocktail. Yeah.
So basically, they do have the bartenders just cranking them out and a cashier. You know, that's not to say that the drinks aren't being made fresh to order. They are, but they're just able to keep up with the volume by virtue of having more people there.
Yeah, that was the Fifth Dimension Royale and the Twilight Daiquiri.
Yes.
Very reasonably priced, by the way. I think they're about $9.50 each.
They were served in champagne flutes, so it's not like a cocktail that you'd get, like, from Fairfax Fair or like down Sunset Boulevard, but it was still good. They were tasty. Where this becomes a little bit of an issue is that they feed you back in from this bar area, and
you have to go to a dead end to hit the bar and then like hit a U-turn
and
come back.
Yes, and then the stage is right there, so people are congregating to watch this three-piece orchestra with the singer, who were fantastic.
They were unbelievable.
They just understood the assignment. It was so classic of that era. The singer, her dress, I turned to you at one point and said, I don't know if she thrifted it or if Disney designed this costume, because it was just so good and so gorgeous. The banter was great in between songs. The songs were fantastic. I enjoyed this so much, but the issue becomes people are gathering in front of them and treating this like a show where Mickey is performing and holding
right.
up their cameras, as opposed to what it's supposed to be, like a cocktail party where you're maybe dancing or just hanging around socializing. So a crowd forms in front of them, and you're also supposed to have an egress from this bar area. So the cast members, bless them, were doing the best they could to keep an open space for people to walk through. But really, what they should have done was had the stage in the back where the bar was, bar where the stage was. But
yeah.
Then you lose the entire theme of what they're trying to do with this band at the base of the tower. The only way that they can maybe mitigate this for next year, if they do it again, is put the band on the balcony, like, above the souvenir shop.
Yeah.
But then you do kind of lose the vibe a little bit.
Or just put a stanchion up. How hard is it to put a stanchion up?
Also fat.
I guarantee you they have a couple.
No, and it's the Tower of Terror, so like to do those
like
stanchions,
the red velvet,
it wouldn't look too terrible. And or you could really lean into the theme, like do a red carpet that leads you to the bar. It would actually look really cute.
That was the only spot where I said, okay, I think the criticism is valid. What impressed me the most is that the night was sold out, but it felt empty. I didn't feel for a moment that this event was oversold.
Yeah, I mean, for as much as the Tip Top Club did feel a little crowded, that had more to do with traffic flow than capacity.
Yes.
But that's also an area where people were complaining because they said that it wasn't worth the hype of the Tip Top Club. And I beg to differ. People are so obsessed with vibes now and Instagrammable photos. I don't know what else you could have wanted from this experience.
I am so glad I'm closing in on my 40s.
To me,
I can't imagine living my life like this.
No. But to me, this captured the essence of not just the ride Tower of Terror, but the era.
Yes.
This was Tinseltown. This is what you think of with classic Hollywood. It's what the entire ride represents. And I, quite frankly, think that people just didn't get it.
I don't think so. Because I think people thought that they were getting the Hollywood Studios version of Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party. And that's not what this is.
We're going to put a pin in that because I feel like that kind of plays into our overall consensus of the evening. So, from Tip Top Club, we went to
Hyperion Theater.
Yes, thank you. This was only last night. And I'm really, like, not that deep into the margarita. Yes, we went to the Hyperion for the What's This sing-along. So, Nightmare Before Christmas. This should surprise no one if you've listened to Monoreal Radio for a while. Like, obviously, we were going to the Nightmare sing-along. So, it's basically an overlay for Frozen. I was hoping for Royal Historian-esque banter. Which is not the case. They did have two actors on stage sort of hosting the sing-along, but they had no dialogue. This, to me, was the only area where I felt there wasn't added value for an overlay. However, you do get the 8-foot Jack Skellington marionette from Not So Scary. And to me, that was worth the price of admission because you're seeing him so much closer than you would without fighting your way up Main Street USA to get a front row seat during Not So Scary.
Yeah. It was fun. It felt thrown together, if I'm being honest. I didn't love it, but I liked seeing the Jack marionette up close. Had it not been for that, I would have said, you can skip it.
And Oogie Boogie. They do have Oogie Boogie out. So for those two things, it was worth it, but I feel like that was the one area where they could have done more because they do kidnap Mr. Sandy Claus and they have the Lock, Shock, and Barrel masks, but like they sort of take them out of this trunk and then they never put them on. They just like raise them up, and I kind of felt like we could have been doing more with that. I have to shout out, though, the scene stealers of this show. They had, and this is where it's like kudos to Disney for spending the money and paying performers and cast members. They had not one but two sign language interpreters. So they were interacting with each other and bouncing off of each other.
They were great.
And I was watching them more than the two actors that were on stage that were supposed to be posing as the host. Forget that they didn't have any dialogue. They were just so much more into the performance and into the spirit of everything, they completely stole the show. And I love just that they have them to be inclusive. But they shouldn't have taken attention away from what was being, what we were supposed to focus on screen. So it's certainly not a knock at the sign language interpreters. It's more of a knock at the actors that could have had more to do. And well, it's not necessarily the actor's fault.
It's how the show was developed.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like if they bring this back for next year, this is an area where they can and will build on it. Or if not, like, to me, this would have been a really cool stage show as an added event.
Right.
So from there, we went back into the Muppets courtyard.
Yes.
Which was decorated really nicely. The only thing that kind of made me go, huh, was that the Muppets were supposed to be, like, the hallmark of this event besides Minnie and Mickey. Like, this was a big deal that you had Kermit and Piggy hosting the show. So you didn't have Muppets 3D opened.
Yeah.
Unless they wanted to keep up the illusion that there is only one Kermit and Piggy and they were at another performance that night.
I just don't think it would have had a draw.
Probably not. Probably not. But the courtyard felt a little empty, which was a shame because Pizza Rizzo had some really nice offerings. We got the meatball served on polenta. We have never been to Pizza Rizzo. Heard nothing but mixed reviews, but after last night, two thumbs up in my opinion.
It was,
this was really good. It was very good.
And a huge meatball. I mean, this meatball was the size of a baseball.
And again, it was like $5 or $6. It really wasn't that bad. It was delicious. The sauce, more than anything
else.
The
sauce was good.
Was very impressive. Like, this was not like jarred sauce. It was good sauce. Not the best meatball I've ever had on property, but like, it was solid. It's up there.
I mean, for what it is, I think, for, you know, it exceeds your expectations.
Yeah.
And then from there, we went to see the show hosted by Piggy and Kermit. With the Hollywood Holidays or whatever. It was something to that effect they were calling it.
This is worth the price of admission.
I can't remember the name of it, but damn it if it wasn't an incredible show.
This is where it was worth the price point. It lived up to the hype and, quite frankly, exceeded all expectations. I was just hyped to see the Muppets in person. But what they did that put it over the top for me, longtime listeners of the show know that it will always be MGM to us. We are the MGM purists. They themed this show that we are a live studio audience watching the taping of a Christmas special. So in the show, they are going to commercial breaks where the hosts talk to the audience and entertain us during the commercial. They count them back in, as in, we're back in 5, 4, 3, 2, and then another number comes out. It was just so well done. Last night, I feel like, not just because of that show, I feel like because of the overall theme and the way that they did these zones of the Kit Kat, of the Tip Top Club.
Yeah.
Of the 90s era Disney afternoon character meet and greets by Echo Lake. It felt like I traveled back in time to MGM. It spoke to my MGM purist heart. So if you love MGM, I promise you, you will love this.
The show was one of the best stage shows I've ever seen at Disney World.
It was great.
Take the nostalgia factor out, the performances were unbelievable. I just, like, it gave you all the holiday feels. You could tell it was a big budget production. Like, they put so much into it.
The dancers were incredible. The band was on stage.
And they were awesome.
That was the coolest thing because it really captured, like, that 50s Art Deco style show. It lent perfectly to the theater space that it was in, but they really did capture that, like, white Christmas,
yes,
kind of a feeling. And then, God bless them, the sign language interpreters,
the same ones
from What's This, are bouncing back and forth, and they are also there continuing to steal the show from the sidelines. It was absolutely incredible. But I loved it. And I love that they incorporated Belle and Tiana. I thought those were perfect choices because Belle came out and sang the song from Enchanted Christmas.
Yep.
Which should be the sequel to Beauty and the Beast. And then Tiana, they had it was almost like a more modern contemporary take on like a New Orleans big band.
And it was like a medley of Christmas.
It was so good. The whole thing. And the costumes were just wonderful.
Everything about it.
Fired on all cylinders. Absolutely loved it. From there, we went to the Brown Derby, which was another big snafu for a lot of people because... And this, I think, to be fair, could have been better explained. They're calling it Jazzy Nights at the Brown Derby, so they do have a jazz performer playing piano on the inside, but you can't just go. There's no bar in there. You can't just go and order a drink and watch. You have to get table service, so you have to do a walk-up line. They are having holiday offerings in there, but I feel like that was sort of a miss to do it as a sit-down dinner because on a four-hour event, why are you going to take an hour out to maybe do a sit-down dinner? An hour, I think I'm being generous, on the low end. Even if they're turning the food over quickly, it's still not quick service. They should have had it set up like a quick service stop where the Brown Derby was open. You could grab food and then bring it in and sit and enjoy the music. But this is where a lot of people got upset because it was sort of an exclusive thing. Or it became an exclusive thing.
I can see where people have a problem with it. I wouldn't have spent that much time there. I mean, we did get cocktails from the outside bar there. You got the pomegranate old fashioned and I got the sugar cookie martini, which was delicious, actually. And it came with that nice sugar cookie. That was like adult milk and cookies because I dipped it in my martini and I ate the cookie and it was so good.
And again, reasonably
priced.
Please.
Very reasonably priced. You know, I want to give the Brown Derby another try because we've eaten there a few times. Once it was unbelievable, so good. The other two times it was dreadful. I do want to give it another try.
Well, in all fairness, we did say it at the time. We felt like they were letting it go, but that was before Galaxy's Edge opened. So we kind of felt like maybe they were waiting to do this like entire revamp of the park, and I'm hoping that it has been since been revived. Because I know people where it's a must-do every single Disney trip.
We haven't eaten there since 2017, so...
Yeah.
It'll be 7 years.
It's time to give it another shot.
Yeah. But from there, we got online to go meet the Rescue Rangers. And let me tell you, they had characters all over the place. I never saw a line more than like 20 minutes.
They really weren't that bad. Reasonable. Snow White and Dopey had a long line throughout the night.
But I wouldn't say more than 20 or 25 minutes.
No, and I appreciate that they had them there because I feel like a lot of people might feel like it's random or maybe because Snow White is maybe coming out next year. That was the first movie. So I love that in the year where we're celebrating 100 years of Disney, they were represented at Hollywood Studios. I thought that that was important.
Yeah.
Because usually they're relegated to Germany at Epcot or Magic Kingdom.
But we got our picture with the Rescue Rangers, all the nostalgic feels. And then I went to the Dockside Diner and I got the Sandy Claus Hot Cocoa, which was the dark hot chocolate with the... with the cherry whipped cream. Oh my god. It was rich. It was decadent. It was not overly sweet. But the cherry with the dark chocolate. Chef's kiss.
No, and then because we didn't have enough dessert, we went over to the commissary because that was the one place that we hadn't really been yet. They had the band right outside of Sci-Fi Dine-In, which is such a great placement because if you sit outside at Baseline, you get that live music.
Fiesta.
There was people dancing. It was very lively. And we went for the Mexican cheesecake.
Yeah, the hot cocoa cheesecake. And we also got the temblique.
Yes, the temblique. That was unexpected, but the picture looked so good. We were like, why not? So we split them. The temblique was like it almost had the consistency of a rice pudding with like nutmeg on top. It wasn't quite like the tres leches kind of dessert that I was hoping for, but it was very good. But I tried that first, and then I went to the cheesecake. It pales in comparison to the cheesecake. Not to say it's not good, but you did the reverse. You had the cheesecake first, and then we switched, and I was like, oh, you're not going to like this as much after starting on the cheesecake. Spice, the cheesecake was incredible.
Spiced chocolate cheesecake on the chocolate cookie.
This was the dessert. If you've seen the picture, it looks like a hot cocoa cup.
It was unbelievable.
Oh, so, so good.
And then we didn't stay for the fireworks because it was Jingle Bell, Jingle Bam. And I will accept critique on that because that's the same fireworks show that they just do at Hollywood Studios. So for a ticketed event where you're paying more money,
you should be getting something more
exclusive.
Especially, like, lean into the theme a little bit more. Like, maybe showcase some of your classic Christmas movies, like the Santa Claus, and, you know, do something with that. What I did like, though, they had the projection on the theater, and it was in that theme of, like, that 50s era present wrapping, and those, there's a very specific type of ornament with that era that MGM, listen to me, that Studios does really embrace. They do still keep that in the decor, but they had the color palette of that muted red and that peppermint green. So they had those as the presents, and then the bow ties, it just looked like that very much Mary Blair style, contemporary feeling, 50s era aesthetic that just lent really well to everything. So I think overall for me, like I said, the MGM purists are absolutely going to love it. My overall take on it was just, I think they knocked it out of the park. I think it was exactly what we wanted it to be, what we were expecting. I think it captured an era, not just of classic Hollywood, but of the MGM that we used to know and love. And if they bring it back, I will be in every year. The other reason being, I think that this was tailored more towards adults. And I think that that's where you're also hearing a lot of the complaints from, is that people were expecting Very Merry 2.0. And I appreciate that Disney did try to thin the herd with an additional offering as an alternative in case your Very Merry date was sold out. Now you have this other option. But read the room a little bit, folks. Lots of cocktails. Lots of, you know, people. And I appreciate so much people were dressed up like it was Dapper Day. This was marketed and tailored to adults. And it showed. They didn't come out and say it overtly, but that's what it is, and I think that people missed that a little bit.
I would do it again at this price point. I think that if the price point were to increase much more than this, I loved it. I love that it's adult-themed. I thought they knocked it out of the park. But if you're going to charge much more, you've got to give us something. Because if you're going to charge much more than what you did, there's very little incentive for me to pick that over Very Merry, because Very Merry is incredible. We know that we love it. But I can go to Very Merry and eat and drink the whole night without taking a dime out of my pocket.
Yes.
Now, on the way out, we were pleasantly surprised.
Yes, that's right. I almost
forgot. Beautiful, commemorative coaster sets. Jollywood coaster sets. We each got a set. So we got four really nice wood painted coasters.
Yes, because at first when we got them, we were like, oh, is this an ornament? But then when we realized they were coasters, they come as a set of two. So you get two per person. So now we have a set of four. But again, this ties back to the theme of a cocktail party. And that's where I was like, okay, they were very intentional with this. I will say, to be fair, I'm a little concerned to put a glass on there that's going to have condensation. I think you could put, like, wine on there and be fine, but if you're having, like, an iced beverage, I don't know about that. We might have to put, like, another varnish.
Like a clear coat on it.
Yeah, just in case. That's not to say that they cheaped out, because it is a very nice commemorative takeaway, but I have some concerns.
Yeah.
My cold margarita is not going on one of those.
Yeah, but definitely thinking if they bring it back next year would go again, and we'll do it up in terms of the outfits.
And if you have any questions at all, please email us, monorealradio@gmail.com, and we'll you know, try and give you as specific answers as we can and help you tailor your night based on what you want to do. If you have tickets already and you are concerned about all of the hatred being spewed.
Yes. Let's talk about a few other things before we wrap up our night here. Starting with the House of Mouse Expo. We had announced a couple of weeks ago that we are going to be attending the House of Mouse Expo, not as attendees, but as a vendor. We're not selling anything. If it's on the table, it's there for you to take for free. We are very excited to do this. Michelle puts on a great event, March 2nd and 3rd of 2024. And she has started to roll out some more exciting guests.
Yes, we've talked about Jason Marsden being announced. We've talked about Brett Iwin. And in the past couple of weeks, a few more people have been announced, including Jim Cummings. So I'm really excited for that. And the gals from Hocus Pocus 2, the younger actresses who play Sarah, Mary, and Winnie as kids.
Yes, and Bill Farmer, she announced.
Yes, and Bill Farmer,
of
course.
So, super excited about that. Let's talk about the what has become my favorite event of the year, my favorite festival of the year. International Festival of the Arts at Epcot is returning January 12th. Through February 19th.
So right after Marathon Weekend, they'll get started.
I am so excited about that. The food was great last year. You know, if you're into Broadway, you are, I know you are, a lot of Broadway performers, so, you know, the artwork, the interactive exhibits, I am so excited that those dates have been announced. I feel like we're going to be spending a lot of time there this year.
Yes, absolutely.
And then let's talk about a really, really great promo that Disney is going to be running for the early part of 2024.
Well, they announced that... I'm sorry, that volcano has been spewing all night, but there's been no fire, so I just feel like it's been
hissing
at us. They're
renovating it. It's under a renovation.
So that's why during our last Dockside chat it wasn't going
correct
at all. We'll still agree that that was in observance of Jimmy Buffett. But anyway, so this promotion, they did announce it a while ago, that kids ages 3 to 9 play and dine for 50% off for early 2024. It has been extended into the spring. So if you are thinking of traveling, there are certain blackout dates around spring break. Where the promotion does not apply, but if you are thinking of coming in the spring, maybe thinking of checking out Flower and Garden, and you don't mind pulling your kids out of school for a few days, this is a good time for you to come and to take advantage of this offering.
Yes, and if you do that, you won't have to worry about staying down the road at Universal Studios, although I still think that it's a decent option.
Yes. So now that we've learned that, get in touch with me. I will check out both resorts for you, and we will find the best option for you.
Yes. We are so excited to hear from you, our friends. Have you gone to Jollywood? What was your experience? Are you going to Jollywood? You can let us know on X, Instagram, and Facebook at Monoreal Radio, or you can email us, monorealradio@gmail.com.
And please do. We have missed this. I know it was only 1 month that we didn't do a Dockside chat. We've been keeping up with our movie reviews as best as we can, but I have missed this. Even tonight, like, I realize it's been like 2 months since I've sat down at Disney Springs and shared a meal with you.
Yeah.
So I've missed everything. So we want to hear from you, especially if you've experienced Jollywood, or if you're going to, you know, or any of the other things that you have planned coming up for Disney. We're excited to talk about it because we've been missing out for the past couple of months.
Yes, and seeing that we are in the Festival of Giving, I want to give away something for one of you. We have a straw charm from the Hidden Mickey Supply Co. from our good friends. I also grabbed a map of the Christmas Tree Trail here from Disney Springs. And I'm going to put the two of them together. The first person that either DMs us on any of our social media or emails us the word jolly. You give us that word, you're getting the prize pack. Thank you all so much for joining us this and every week on Monoreal Radio. I just
have
gave
a happy Thanksgiving.
Yes, happy and safe. I just gave you all of that social media and the email address. Don't forget we are on Threads and TikTok as well at Monoreal Radio. Be sure to like, subscribe, and rate us on your podcast platform of choice. And for links to everything related to the show, it is online at monorealradio.com. For Jackie, I'm Sean. Have a magical week, everyone.